Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Neil Coolong, sir, welcome.
Thank you for having me, as always. I hope you guys are having as fine a day as I am.
Anytime you're on, I do. So I appreciate you very much. You know that. Chase Claypool says, I'm not just a starting receiver, I'm a top three receiver. I admire the confident statement, but I don't even know if he's one of the top three receivers in the division.
Chase is top three on his team. Maybe that's what he meant.
It's a good start.
I'm not sure. If we really want to spin it, what I would say is this is evidence that Claypool is so focused on him and his work that he's not aware of what happens with the rest of the league, and that could be a good thing. All of that said, it's funny to me. On the side of media that you and I are on, we see the colleagues that ask those kinds of questions, or at least, we can see how the lead-in that led to that response occurred. And in a lot of ways, my thought is, don't ask that question, because the only answer you're going to get is the obvious one that no one's going to agree with, and the player is going to end up getting ripped apart for it, for something that really just it's inane. It's pointless.
Right.
It doesn't matter what Chase Claypool thinks of his stature among his peers in the league. Nobody objective could call him that. And there's no way that Chase Claypool is objective. So, you're getting the only answer that he can really give without creating more of a problem. And it'd be a lot better for him to say that he is than not. It'd be more of a story in my mind if you just said, yeah, you know what? I'm not all that good. I'm kind of average.
Right. Exactly.
You're right. I was okay as a rookie. I really went downhill last year.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Top three. No. Top 80. Maybe. The thing with Claypool, regardless of what he says, and he quickly is becoming someone that doesn't seem capable of ever saying the right thing, at least in the right way. The big thing with him is, from a technical level, this is my main concern. I don't care how favorably people think that he is comparable to Calvin Johnson,
right,
the first ballot Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Height, weight, speed, it's nice. It's not a detriment to a game, to somebody's ability, to somebody's game. It does not make you an NFL wide receiver. Mm-hmm. It can get you a contract. It does not catch the ball for you. It does not get you open. The guys on the other side of you are pretty athletic as well. Usually the cornerback is the most athletic guy on the team. Your ability as an athlete, as well as a competitor, is what's going to make you a complete player. And where Chase Claypool is, especially after watching, I thought, a very disappointing second year,
right,
he needs to learn how to play the position.
Right.
I don't think it's worth any more time to ask Chase Claypool if he thinks he's a top three player at his position in the league than it is asking Zach Gentry the same question.
Right.
He's nowhere near that. Putting him on the spot, it's the only answer that he can come up with that would make a reasonable sense for him. And it's an unfair spot to put an athlete in. I don't like that. I don't think his answer in that sense really matters. I get that it's a talking point, certainly in
right,
what is literally the deadest time of the NFL season, which is right where we're at. It's just interesting to me that Claypool finds himself on the wrong end of these things pretty often. And it still just calls out to the fact that his measurables were godlike.
Mm-hmm.
You put all these things together. He was still a second round draft pick and the ninth or the 10th receiver taken.
Mm-hmm.
A historic level of depth at receiver in that class, still, I think just outside the top 50 drafted. And you watch his college film, you can see why. You watch his film, generally speaking, over the first 2 years, you can see why. he shouldn't be in the position that he's in if he expects more of himself. If he put the work in that he really needed to put in, he should be better than he is. I can't get past that. And the receiver position, that the nuance that comes with it, you can show up and make an impact. And we're seeing receivers get better and better every year. I mean, it's crazy. Just in the last decade alone,
yeah.
It's remarkable how much better they are in college than they were. But still, in the NFL, there are a lot of small things, nuances that you have to develop with time and effort, both, you know, live in game and practice reps, as well as on your own. I didn't see any of that from Claypool last year. That's more of my concern. This needs to be a big year for him. And as it goes, if he goes out, puts up 90, 1410 this year, he's going to get paid $25 million because right. That's the position and that's the market. But right now he hasn't earned anything even close to that. And I hope for his sake, he is putting the right work in and he's going to show up disciplined and ready to play. And I can't bank on that. Certainly not after his year two.
When you look at the Steeler offense, because of the change at quarterback and the uncertainty there, is this as much a mystery to you as it is to me as to how good they can be?
Choosing my words carefully here. Mystery. If they get really good, I think some of it will be a mystery. Yeah, I don't. They're not as talented a group relative to their peers. And what I mean by that is you've got usually the phrase that I've always heard within the NFL is they call them Jags, just a guy.
Yeah.
The Steelers have players who are better than Jags,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, they're really not outstanding in comparison to other players around. You mentioned the division. Division's loaded with
mm-hmm.
talent.
Mm-hmm.
And the Steelers, offensively, the Steelers players don't match up to that. I'm sorry. In a lot of ways, they don't. They have by far and away the fourth of four quarterbacks,
right.
Arguably 6 and 8 in terms of their starter and their backup at that position. I like Najee Harris as a running back. He's nowhere close to where Nick Chubb is
mm-hmm.
from what we've seen. Now Harris has had 1 year. Let's give him a chance. But Chubb is an excellent running back. I think Chubb is the best all-around running back in the game. I also think that Joe Mixon is an excellent all-around running back.
Mm-hmm.
Najee Harris hasn't shown he's at that level yet. As far as their receivers go, Deontay Johnson's in a Pro Bowl because he replaced Jamar Chase, and nobody in their right mind would put Deontay Johnson over Jamar Chase. It's not even close. The Ravens inexplicably just seem to not value the receiver position. I don't know why, though I am a big fan of Rashad Bateman. I think you're going to see him do some things this season. I like Deontay Johnson's player. He's not a dude. He's not a high-level guy. And when you don't have any of those on your offense, it's going to take you a lot to make hay with it. And
yeah.
I don't know exactly how the Steelers are going to do that by having a bunch of okay guys. You know, this guy's all right. He's not bad. He can do it. When you have to set up an offense that requires you to go 10, 11 plays to score, 7 points, maybe even sometimes 3 points, you're going to get blown out eventually. It's going to catch up with you. The NFL right now, you can't expect to hold teams under 17 points literally every single game. It's just not going to happen. And when you need that much possession to score, which is really kind of what it seems to me the Steelers are built to do now, it's not going to be able to hold out over the course of 17 games. People in opposition to what I'm saying are pointing to Chase Claypool as this dynamic playmaking guy, despite the fact that we're really not seeing that. I understand that he lit up fantasy football for a stretch there when he was a rookie, but watch last year, watch him play. He's barely competitive when the ball is in the air and he's 6'5", 6'4", whatever he is. He's not a 50-50 ball guy. He's more like a 70 or like a 30-70 guy. Deontay Johnson is an excellent tactician. He runs very good routes. He has good balance. He can make guys miss, but he's not incredibly explosive down the field. In other words, if you want to get him 160 targets, he's going to catch you 110, 115 passes for, you know, 10, 11 yards a pop. Meanwhile, Ja'Marr Chase, on the same level of target and opportunity, is going to get you 14 yards a pop, and he's going to score twice as often. Those are playmakers. The Steelers don't have those on offense. Najee Harris is applauding between the tackles, running back. He's not a playmaker. These are complementary guys that need a couple dudes in there to make the big time plays. Now, the rookie class is, from what we know of Pickens, is he a guy that can step in and make plays right away? It's a big question mark. We don't know. He's coming off an ACL tear. The guy has all the talent in the world. I'm really impressed with his natural ability. There has to be something of a learning curve there. We can't expect him to go out and make a bunch of plays right away. But he's a talented guy. He's going to do a thing or two. I really like Calvin Austin as a player, and I think we're going to see that. Depending on how he's going to be used, there's a lot of things that he can do in short spaces. He might add an element to their offense that they currently can't really do particularly well. Their coaching and their preparation is going to have to be top-notch, and guys are going to have to play well above what we've seen them now for this team to be a 25, 26 point a game offense. And I don't see that happening right now. I like where they're building it. We'll see how it goes. And I didn't even mention the fact that Mitch Trubisky is the quarterback. And there really isn't anything to suggest that you're able to maintain a good to great NFL offense with him as a quarterback. Cause frankly, it just hasn't happened. In his career, he had 4 years of it in Chicago. You can win games with defense all you want. If your offense isn't producing points, though, you're not going to do much. And that's really what happened in his career. They need guys to step up. Some of that is going to be scheme, but the rubber meets the road. It's a one-on-one game. Offensive players need to make plays. And where we're sitting right now, they don't have guys who have shown they can make plays consistently in the NFL. I hope that changes, but they've got a lot of work in front of them, that's for sure.
We get you on the show every Tuesday because we can talk about something every week, regardless. What does it say, Neil, about a league that plays 63 days out of the year? 63. Yet still dominates the other 302 or 303 in a leave year, like no other. What does that tell us about this league? And the league's not perfect. Deshaun Watson's a great example of that, and how the league's going to handle it, we'll see. But what does it tell you about the power of football in this country that in 302 days, when you're not playing a game, everybody's still talking about you?
One thing I've noticed in my career, and that this has really been instrumental in the work that I've done, people grossly, grossly misunderstand and underestimate the draw of the off-the-field portion of the NFL. Mm-hmm. And it's to the point where, I mean, as a kid growing up, I was the kid that got up Saturday morning for the draft and watched it. It started 11 a.m. Central and went through to like 7 p.m. I watched the whole thing.
Me too.
I didn't move the whole day.
Me too.
I absolutely loved it. Just loved it. Wall to wall. And then it was on the next day too. It was a little bit earlier, even more rounds to sit and watch. I probably lost a year of my life watching the draft when I was a kid, just eating junk food in my basement. I lived and breathed it. I got into fantasy football and I absolutely loved it. And this was before, advanced cable packaging and the ability to, online presence, the ability to really follow everything minute to minute. And that's what I wanted to get into. I was a newspaper writer. I was the sports editor of a daily newspaper in Iowa for a bit. My main thing was always the NFL. Just as a fan, I was always just drawn to it. And what I found was that the off-season machinations, all of the stuff that goes with it, their structure of free agency, the salary cap starting in 1993, the way trades went down, the league didn't hype it up. If anything, the NFL was behind its own cycle as far as really promoting its product. People were just all about it because the names were so much bigger, and there was always a sense of tribalism that the NFL couldn't actively promote or anything, but it still did because it just kind of took care of itself. Your fandom was your identity. That's what you affiliated with. Those are the people that you hung around with. You loved fans of your team. You hated fans of the other team, not literally in most cases, but there was opposition. That tension, that conflict, it brings out much more than just the game. And with that, the act of getting better, the act of, how about this, for example, Randy Moss out of nowhere falls to 21 overall and completely flips the league on its head.
Right.
Randy Moss and Randall Cunningham essentially create the tactic of the back shoulder throw because Randall Cunningham couldn't throw the ball past Randy Moss, and Randy Moss learned how to sprint past guys, turn around, and jump. That tactic, the fact that he went as late as he did and completely flipped the team from one direction to another, it feels like every team has the opportunity to get a guy like that. And there are so many examples of that in the draft. You as a fan get super excited to watch it. It's like the most balanced player acquisition event in sports. There's so much more to it. In hockey, guys can get drafted and you don't see them for 3 years. Same thing with baseball. And baseball, for the vast majority of all of this, really up until just this past year, they're 68 rounds or whatever it is. You never hear of most of the guys that get drafted at all, let alone the ones that will actually make the team. In basketball, it's three guys in every draft. So if you're drafting four or later, it doesn't matter, really. I mean, it does, but as a long-suffering Timberwolves fan, I can assure you it takes more than one guy for a team like that. You get all that, you put it together. Football seems to have the most opportunity for a team to go from terrible to really good, with the exception of four or five franchises that kind of can't consistently seem to put it together. Most teams have had enough for their fans to be excited about once every couple of years, at least. And the thrill of that goes into every other aspect of the game. So my long-winded point here is of the 302 days of the year where they're not playing games, it's all about what's coming. It's all about what's next. And I think that sense of hope, that sense of anticipation, it blends in with their schedule for the games to a point where it's always like the battle isn't that far away and you have enough time to kind of gather up your fellow fans and really get into it, really get excited about it. So it's an anticipatory game as a fan. It's a following more than anything. Baseball, it's every day. There's so much of it that it gets boring after a while. You can't really lump it together in an exciting way. It's purely transactional. Football, in the NFL, that product is just so much more what could be. You know, it's the hope, it's the promise. I really think that the biggest reason for any of this, and I can assure you from a content and traffic standpoint, it is all about the off season. It's far more lucrative in the off season if you know what you're doing,
yeah,
than it is inside the season, because fans are more into that anticipation and the debate over who's going where and what than it is talking about just the past game. They get into that part of it, and then it's as I say, socks in the dryer. You know, it's warm for 5 minutes, and that's it. After that, it's just kind of the same thing again. You throw them back in the dryer. You want to have that constant cycle going for it, and it's all rooted around optimism, hope, and anticipation. Fans check the ask Jets fans. Jets fans check out after week five every year, and they're the first ones in line to start talking about the draft.
That's right.
They know more about the draft than any fan base because they're always big players in the draft.
Yep.
And it's exciting. You can see why. Eventually, it's going to work for them. You know, that's the way the league is built. You hope, anyway, for their sake, they can put it together. But it's always about what's coming next. I mean, I don't think any other sport captures that the way that the NFL does.
Well said. That's why I asked. I mean, I thought you'd give a great answer. You did. My friend, thanks so much. Can't wait to talk with you next week.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Neil Coolon.